Helpful questions. Did you see him? Braden just read him. Look back at this text. Matthew chapter 8, verse 23 says, when he got into the boat, his disciples followed him. Behold, there arose a great storm. A great storm. It arose on the sea so that the boat was being covered with the waves. Can you get the picture in your mind? Not talking about a little pond. We're talking about the Sea of Galilee. It is miles across. And storms would come down from the north without warning. They did not have a Jed Castle. They did not have a Damon Lane or a David Payne or a Lacey or any of the wonderful meteorologists we have today. They got caught on the Sea of Galilee in a storm. And where was Jesus? He was asleep. Verse 25 says, they came to him, they woke him, saying, save us, Lord, we are perishing, we are dying. And what's his question? When you read that, does that sound like a helpful question to you? Why are you afraid? Do you think he was trying to elicit an answer? Explain to me why you're afraid. Do you think that's what the question was for? Or do you think he was trying to make a point? Why are you afraid? And Matthew doesn't go into an explanation of what he meant by the question. What's he say after he asks the question? Why are you afraid, you men of little faith? And then it says, and this is Matthew's version, he got up and he rebuked the winds and the sea, and it became perfectly calm. And then almost as if we wouldn't have thought this, he says in verse 27, the men were amazed. Would you be amazed? You're looking at a storm coming in. We got weathermen saying, it's coming, it's on us. I don't know how your thing on your phone works, but my app usually goes off, the alarm goes off, about the time the storm is past us and in the next county. It should say when it goes, beep, 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 you just had a storm. But you see it coming, and then it's on you. I remember years ago, I thought it was going to be a beautiful day. Well, it already was a nice day. It was 80 degrees. It was in November, and I was out, and the wind started picking up, and it was 80 degrees. It was so hot that what I was doing, the work I was doing outside, I took my shirt off. Nobody was around. I know, you don't want to get that picture in your mind. But it was so hot that I took my shirt off in November. And then the wind picked up and it started to rain. And the rain got a little chilly and the rain turned to sleet. And then the rain turned to hail. And then the rain turned to snow. How many of you remember a blizzard we had in November that just kind of came up out of nowhere? That happened, and it wasn't maybe 30 years ago. If somebody had come to that point and said, hey, let's stop this, and all of a sudden the wind would have stopped and the snow would have stopped and the sun would have come out and it would have been calm. They said, what kind of man is this that even the winds and the sea obey him? Now, this is Matthew's account. The other accounts are not very different, except if you go to Mark, see what Mark says here. Mark chapter 4. Because he gives an account of the same thing. Some of the details are just a tiny bit different. Let's take a look at how they're different and talk about that. This is Mark chapter 4, verse 35. On that day, when evening came, he said to them, "Let's go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd, they took him along with them in the boat, just as he was, and the other boats were with him. So there were other boats, not just this boat, there were other boats. There arose a fierce gale of wind, and the waves were breaking over the boat so much that the boat was already filling up. Now, I've got a couple of kayaks, and I really like those kayaks because in the front and in the back, there are these two big, huge pieces of styrofoam. So I know if I ever tump that thing over, it's not going to sink. It's going to stay afloat. These guys didn't have any styrofoam. Their boat was filling up with water, and they were afraid, thinking they were going to die. And Mark goes on. This is how Mark's account goes. Jesus himself was in the stern, in the back, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" And he got up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Hush, be still." And the wind died down, and it became perfectly calm. And he said to them, "Why are you afraid? How is it that you have no faith?" Now, what's different? Did you catch what's different? In Matthew's account, it looks like, it appears that Jesus asked the question before he calmed the storm. In Mark's account, and Luke does this as well, it appears that Jesus asked the questions after he calmed the storm. Makes a little bit of a difference, but here's what I'm thinking. He probably did it before and after. Now, I'm not trying to make something up and add anything to the scripture. It's just that Matthew says he said it before he calmed the storm, and Mark and Luke say he did it after. But you can imagine Jesus waking up. "Yeah, there's a storm. Where's your faith? Storm, be still." And everything calms down. And Jesus would repeat the question. "Why are you afraid?" And now, I don't know about you, but if I'd been there, I'm pretty sure the answer to that question for me would have been, "Duh. The boat was filling up with water. We thought we were dying. You're asleep." And Jesus, awakened by them, stills the storm and asks these two questions. One is, "Why were you afraid?" The other is, "How is it," in verse 40 of Mark chapter 4, "how is it that you have no," what'd you say? "Faith." What is he saying? It looks to me like he's saying, if you just had a little faith, you wouldn't have been afraid. Is that what he's saying? Who'd they have with them in the boat? Of course, they had Jesus. And there's something about this when I read it, because he doesn't explain what he means by all this. He just asks the questions. And what are these questions supposed to do? Well, they're supposed to provoke some thought. If Jesus asks the question, what I need to do is figure out what the right answer to that question is. Why were you afraid? Well, I got to figure out now, why was I afraid? And what would I say? Well, I say, "Well, I thought we were going to die." Well, the next question from him might be, "Why did you think you were going to die?" So, "Well, my eye was on the storm, not on you." Maybe that would be my response. And if he asked the question, "How is it that you have no faith?" Well, now, wait a minute. Did these guys have faith? Of course they had faith. They were with him. They followed him. He said, "Let's go to the other side." And they followed him to the other side. And whoever was in those other boats, I bet they had a measure of faith as well. They followed Jesus. They listened to Jesus. They believed in him. But this is a question that compels us to go farther with wherever we are now in our faith. Are you going to believe when the storms come in your life that it's okay? Are you going to be afraid when things start to happen that do not look good? Are you going to maintain your faith even when everything around you seems to be falling apart? It's no secret. I don't think I'm letting a cat out of the bag here. This is an election year. You're aware of that, right? Is there any controversy at all about our candidates? Have you ever just hung your head and gone, what is happening? Bless his heart. Our present president, I'm not trying to make fun, but the brother has trouble putting a sentence together. And who do you believe when they tell you the other side is lying? You know the old joke about a politician. Maybe we don't tell that joke enough anymore. How do you know when a politician is lying? Oh, see, you already know. His lips are moving. And we laugh at that because we know there's some degree of truth to that. I don't think they're all liars any more than the rest of us are liars. But when I look at the condition of our nation today, I'm inclined to be a little anxious. How about you? I'm not asking you to amen that. I'm just asking you to think about that. And it's not just our political situation. By the way, regardless of what party you are, what affiliation you have, regardless of who you're for and who you're against, be kind. Don't let the ugliness of the world get into your mind and your heart with regard to the differences in politics. I know there's a lot at stake. When has there ever not been a lot at stake? But who's in charge? It's not Joe Biden, and I don't mean that as a joke either. It's not Kamala Harris. It's not the Democratic Party. It's not Donald Trump. It's not the Republican Party. It's not the independents, although they would like to be in the... Well, who wouldn't? Who's in charge? We know it's God. I want to look at a couple of things Daniel has to say about that. We just finished a study of Daniel this morning. And he says some really excellent things in chapter 4 that help us to understand what's really happening in the world with regard to leaders. But it's not just that. There's a text in Isaiah. If you've read what Isaiah said in chapter 5, by the way, Isaiah lived at a time when the people of God, were straying so far from the truth that God was calling them prostitutes. That's the wording that he used. And here's what Isaiah said that helps us to understand why God was using that kind of terminology and referring to his own people that way. In Isaiah chapter 5, it says this, "Woe to those who drag iniquity with cords of falsehood." By the way, you see the word drag there. Anybody see the opening ceremony for the Olympics? I did not. I only heard about it. Is it true? Was there a drag show? It's nothing new. It's nothing new. This is what Isaiah says. Woe to those who drag iniquity with cords of falsehood. You can see the picture. They've got cords of falsehood, lies, as if they were ropes. And they've got those lies around evil things, and they're dragging them in, pulling them in. Who say, let him make speed, let him hasten his work that we may see it. And let the purpose of the Holy One of Israel draw near and come to pass that we may know it. They're mocking. That's what they're doing. Come down from the cross and prove to us. Oh, let's sit by and see if God will save him. Mockers. Same thing in Isaiah as it was at the cross. Verse 20, woe to those who call evil good and good evil. See, this is 2,700 years old. There's no relevance to this today. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who substitute darkness for light and light for darkness, who substitute bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and clever in their own sight. Anybody like that? in the world today? There isn't anything new under the sun. It's all the same old stuff, just repackaged and cleverly packaged. I was reading something recently that made good sense. They said, we're being told a lot of lies. And it's not so we will believe the lies, but it's so that if we hear enough lies, we will come to the point where we will not believe in anything. And I think that is what much of our problem is in America today. People have stopped believing in anything. Our institutions that used to be honored have been brought low. Things that we used to respect, justice, freedom, real freedom, have been brought low. And we see these things going on, and my heart is stirred. I'm upset. But what question would Jesus ask that would help me? He would ask, Marty, why are you afraid? Marty, where is your faith? If I put my faith in America, oh, don't do that. I love this country. Do you not love this country? This is a great nation that has done so much good for me and for the whole world. Take a look at history as history really stands before that history gets rewritten. And see how much good this nation has done. Anybody remember something called the Berlin Airlift? Has anyone in school even heard of the Marshall Plan? All of this was after World War II to help those that we wiped out in World War II to get back on their feet. That's what that was all about. This was blessing our enemies. That's American history. We never hear about those kinds of things anymore, do we? We don't see too many pictures of the American cemeteries on all the foreign nations where they are. And I'm not trying to sing the praises of our nation to say that we are the end all and everything. I'm just saying what we're hearing today doesn't match up with the actual history. Anything new about that? When has the world not been filled with liars? The danger for us is not that we believe the lies, but that we hear so many lies that we stop believing that anything could be true. What did Paul write in Romans chapter 3? And it relates to what Isaiah is saying. Paul wrote there, let God be true and every man a liar. And that's where you and I are. Jesus, in the face of the storm, where the waves are coming into the boat, and it looks like, just seems obvious to everybody, we're going to die. And he says, peace be still. And the storm is quietened, goes away, stops. And there's peace. And he asks the question, why were you afraid? And as obvious as you might think the answer is, it's the wrong answer. Because he's trying to tell us there's no reason to be afraid. And the answer to the fear is faith. That's what he helps us with in the next question. Where is your faith? Don't put your faith in anybody or anything except Jesus Christ. Do I need to repeat that? Don't put your faith in anybody or anything, any nation, any bank account, any philosophy, don't put your name in anything or anyone except Jesus Christ. I think that's what he's saying in the boat. Why are you afraid? Here I am. Where is your faith? Faith in what? Not faith in what? Faith in who? Faith in him. He was right there. I know this is another one of those places where I wish there was one more verse where he would get explicit about exactly what he meant. But it's as if he's saying, Marty, you're smart enough. Yes, I know that sounds funny saying that, doesn't it? But he's saying to each one of us, you're smart enough to figure this out. I gave you a mind, I gave you a brain, I gave you a heart, and all of that I've given you, God would say, is attuned to me. Read these things and you figure it out for yourself. You wrestle with these things and you come to the conclusion that you need to come to. And you'll probably come to some wrong conclusions along the way. But you keep working at it and you'll eventually figure it out. It's like learning to drive. Oh, learning to drive is easy now. Everything's an automatic. Who learned to drive on a standard? His daddy will probably make sure he does. A clutch. What's a clutch? That's a thing from the devil. At least all of us who ever learned to use one thought that at one time. And then if you're doing it on a motorcycle, oh my goodness, the clutch is up here. It's not on the, it's just like, wow, how am I going to learn? And then you learn it. Riding a bicycle, no clutch on a bicycle. You just balance it. You steer. And what do you say to your child when you're trying to teach them how to ride that bicycle? Balance. Be sure and keep your balance. Steer, steer. You got to keep pedaling. That's too much to do. Pedal and steer and balance and look where you're going. Look where, oh, that's four things. Dad, I can't do all four of those things. And then before you know it, they're riding a bicycle. And you're out there in the yard side, slow down. You're laughing because you know it's the truth. And God is showing us His Son, telling these guys, or asking these guys, what are you afraid of? Where's your faith? And it's like He's hollering down, balance, steer, keep pedaling. You're going to make it. Guess what we're going to do? We're going to make it. You're going to make it. I'm going to make it. Why? Because of faith in Jesus Christ. That's the whole point, faith in Jesus Christ. I mentioned Daniel. I want you to turn to Daniel chapter 4. This isn't just about an election year, but I do want to kind of focus for a little bit at least on this idea of who's in charge of what. Nebuchadnezzar was king in Daniel chapter 4. He was the king under whom Daniel served. And by the way, think about that. Where was Daniel serving? He was serving in Babylon. What was he doing in Babylon? Judah had been so evil, so wicked, that God had sent the Babylonians to conquer them violently with war. And then they carried Daniel and his three buddies, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, carried them off into captivity. Daniel is in captivity in a foreign nation because his own nation has been so evil that God brought judgment on them in the form of these heathen pagans. War. Horrible thing. A lot of people died. But Daniel was carried away captive. And he's in this foreign nation. And who is he serving? He's serving God. He's serving under Nebuchadnezzar, but he's serving God. And as you read through the record of Daniel's life and that of his three buddies, God was using them mightily in a foreign nation. Do things always have to be the way we want them to be? No, they don't. No, they don't. What did Jesus pray in the garden? Father, if it be your will, let this cup pass. And then what did he pray? But not my will, but yours be done. I know what I want to have happen for America, but I don't know what God's will is. So you pray for America, what you think is right for America, and then you finish your prayer, but Lord, I defer to you. So that was Nebuchadnezzar. He was king of Babylon, and he looked out over his kingdom, and he surveyed everything, and he said, man, I'm the man, I am the guy. And then he gets this message. You're like a tree that's going to be cut down. But it's going to be metal bands put around that stump. And those metal bands mean you're coming back. But until you recognize that God is the one who rules in the nations of human beings, you'll be acting like an animal. They'll turn you out into the fields and your hair will grow long like feathers and your nails like claws and you'll eat grass like an ox until you realize that the Most High rules in the kingdoms of men. And that's what we read here in verse 17, Daniel chapter 4, verse 17. This sentence is by the decree of the angelic watchers and the decision is a command of the holy ones in order that the living may know. Now, what did it say? In order that the living may know, not just Nebuchadnezzar, but that the living may know. Are you alive? You're supposed to know this. That the living may know that the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind and bestows it on whom he wishes. And he sets over it the lowliest of men. Except, of course, in America. No, that's what he does in America too. I don't know about you. I used to watch late night talk shows back when there were some worth watching. And I admit that there were times when I avoided watching the show when I saw that there was going to be a celebrity on there that I thought a lot of. Because sometimes on late night talk shows, celebrities will reveal themselves in ways that don't make you admire them anymore. And I didn't want to see that. God is telling us, I'm in charge. And I put people over nations who aren't fit to be there, essentially. Set over at the lowliest of men. Well, that's not the only time he said that. Look over at verse 32. 7 periods of time. This is Daniel chapter 4, verse 32. 7 periods of time will pass over you until you recognize that the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind and bestows it on whomever he wishes. And then verse 34, Nebuchadnezzar is recording this. He says, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes toward heaven and my reason returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever, for his dominion is an everlasting dominion. His kingdom endures from generation to generation, and all the inhabitants of the earth are accounted as nothing, but he does according to his will in the host of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. He's saying, I finally recognized that my position is from God. And he's the one who's put me here. And he's the one who puts every king in power and every delegate in power and every representative in power. I know we vote and I encourage you to get out and vote. But the bottom line is, as far as God says, I'm the one who's doing it. Daniel comes back to that in chapter 5 as if that's something that hasn't been ingrained in the thinking well enough yet. And he says this in verse 21. Now he's talking to Belshazzar, the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, and he says, he was also driven away from mankind, and his heart was made like that of beasts, and his dwelling place was with the wild donkeys. He was given grass to eat like cattle, and his body was drenched with the dew of heaven until he recognized that the Most High God is ruler over the realm of mankind, and he sets over it whomever he wishes. So when we see that happen, what question would Jesus ask? We see people taking positions of power that we don't think belong there, that we think will hurt our country. And Jesus would ask us, what are you afraid of? Where is your faith? If our faith is in the people or the position, we're going to be scared. Here's something you don't read in the Bible. You don't see God saying, every week you need to set aside some special time, and what I want you to do is to get a private place, like your closet. Go into your closet and close the door, and for maybe 30 minutes to an hour, wring your hands and worry. Youngsters may not know what hand wringing is. This is hand wringing. It's, oh no, what are we going to do? Oh no, we're just, it's a nervous, scared response when you got all this scared energy and you don't know what to do with it and you just wring your hands. That's hand wringing. You don't find it in the Bible, do you? I'll tell you what you do find. Look over at 1 Peter chapter 5 and we'll close with this. That's how I get everybody's attention, by the way, when I say we'll close with this. 1 Peter chapter 5, and I want you to know the context of this letter. You read it for yourself, and you'll realize, I'm sure like I realize now, that he's writing to the church, encouraging them to stay strong in spite of the persecution that is coming. He'll mention that in chapter 4 and verse 12. It says, beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for testing. as though some strange thing were happening to you. Don't be surprised when this happens. Now that was then, but it's still today a truth. Don't be surprised when a fiery trial comes your way. In chapter 5, we read this. Verse 6. Humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God that he may exalt you at the proper time, casting all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Now, what did Jesus say about anxiety? Remember the Sermon on the Mount? He said, be anxious for nothing. Well, actually, Paul wrote it out that way, but it's essentially where Paul got it from Jesus, who said, don't be anxious. Don't worry about what you're going to eat. Don't worry about what you're going to wear. God feeds the birds and he clothes the flowers. Don't worry about those things. Seek one thing first. What are we supposed to seek? Kingdom of God and his righteousness. Matthew chapter 6, verse 33. If you'd like a reference for that, you can go and you can read that and you can implant that in your mind and in your heart. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. But if you have anxiety, and all of us do, Peter says, give it to God. Whatever you're anxious about, whatever you're worried about, give it to God. Humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God that he may exalt you at due time, casting all your anxiety on him. And why does he say to do that? Why does God say, and why does Peter write it out here? How does he answer that question? Why does he say, cast all your anxiety on God? The answer is because he cares for you. Now that's a question. Do you believe God cares for you? Now that's a helpful question because it makes you think. It makes you have to answer. Because if you're going to come up with an answer to a question like that, you've got to have some evidence. What's the evidence that God cares for you? Oh, there's plenty of it. You stop and think about it. You are here today. Right now, you're in here. Somebody has taught you the gospel. You heard it from somebody. Do you realize how many people there are in the world who've never heard the gospel, but you've heard the gospel, and you've heard the gospel in such a circumstance that you've said to yourself, it's worthy of me being with the Choctaw Church of Christ when they meet on Sunday, whatever day this is. You know about Jesus. You know about salvation. We used to wear these little bands, and they had a question on them. And the question was, what would Jesus do? If we ever have another band, I would like for that band to say, what would Jesus ask? What would Jesus ask? And if we were in that boat with the apostles, we know Jesus would ask, why are you afraid? Jesus would ask, where's your faith? It doesn't matter how big the storms are. Doesn't matter how much water's filling a boat. Doesn't matter how dark it is or how bleak it seems or how hopeless the situation might appear to you. Could you imagine being one of those Israelites and you're there at the shore of the Red Sea and Pharaoh's coming with his army? Looks like, well, it's all over now. No. They never could have seen it coming that God would part the sea and they would walk across on dry land. Who ever heard of such a thing? And you and I have yet to see the things that God will do to show us his power and his might. And so keep the faith. Remember the questions. Why are you afraid? And where is your faith? And always have an answer. We're going to stand and sing a song of encouragement for those who might be ready to respond. Yeah, I know, not yet. where's Titus? Titus, you better get ready. People are ready to come down right now. You better get down here and start this song for anybody who's ready to respond this morning. Let's stand and sing together.